I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
If you listen to this podcast, you clearly appreciate quality. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson is a multifaceted guitar shop offering guitar instruction, new and used guitars and amplifiers, and all accessories. We offer guitar repair of the highest quality. Instead of experiencing the total hassle of a big box store or a snarky boutique, take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson and experience what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the Axley Law Firm. Speak of the devil, he's on the live line with us. It is Mike Riley. Mike, how are things?
Things are great. I thought when you said speak of the devil, you were just talking about a Trump quote, and I just assumed, but, you know, I probably qualify in some ways. I'm certainly no match for him when it comes to deviltry.
Before we get going, what's your number if people need help in a personal injury case?
608-257-5661.
All right. So you and I have disagreed on a number of gun issues over the years. Obviously, what happened in Florida was another horrific case of a gun being misused in America. But this statement by the president the other day really is the coup de grace.
You know, I really believe you don't know until you test it. But I think I really believe I'd run in there even if I didn't have a weapon. And I think most of the people in this room would have done that, too, because I know most of you.
You know, I had people calling on my radio show, and we really didn't get into the Trump thing. We all talked about whether we had the courage to walk into fire, so to speak. But even a couple people who said they were for Trump said that was the most ridiculous thing they'd ever heard. One guy said, and this was a Trump supporter, he said, that guy would push his wife in the way of bullets.
Isn't it fascinating that you can feel that way about the guy, which is completely accurate, and still support him? It just betokens the complete hostility towards Hillary, I guess, which, as we both know, was key. But just this, there is this notion that somehow, because I've had people who are generally fairly intelligent tell me they're convinced that because he was a businessman, he was going to, well, you know, guys run 400 businesses into bankruptcy. I mean, that's no guarantee of anything. And given the tax bill, I guess he's pushing the country in that direction as well. So I did think, and I'm sure lots of people thought, it's hardly a brilliant insight, but I mean, you know, given the bone spur deferment, you'd say, so would you have hobbled in, you know, on your poor bone spur feet, which only allow you to play 36 holes with a card on occasion? You know,
have you seen him? Have you seen him when he golfs? He takes the card onto the green.
That is incredible. I mean, now that should forfeit the votes of anybody who's a golfer, and certainly anybody who belongs to a country club where a lot of his support came from, no doubt, at least the financial part of his support. So, but that's typical. I mean, that's typical of his arrogance and his selfishness and his lack of concern for anyone else. I mean, that's who he is. You know, it is interesting, and you said you guys talked about it. I mean, I think we've all thought about things like that. I love kids. I mean, I just, you know, I'm not saying most people don't like kids, but I really love kids. So, yeah, I would go in, you know. I just would. I'm an old hockey player and I'm an old CIA guy, so I don't think it would come that hard. You never know, and nobody does until you're actually faced with it. But I'll tell you this, if I were an officer who was there to protect the school, I would not sit out, cower outside with my gun while this went on. That is just despicable.
Well, there were so many mistakes. So this kid was crying for help. And the one thing that really got me out of this story was the people that took him in after his mother died let him bring an AR-15 into their home. That's another one where, really? Really? You know, you're taking in a troubled kid. You know, he's been kicked out of a school, and you're gonna let him bring an AR-15 into your house? I don't understand that.
I thought, didn't they say, I've read a lot of it, certainly not all of it. I thought it's one of them said that they had actually told him he couldn't at the end, and that was maybe part of what triggered it, is they said he couldn't.
Well, they let him bring it into the house. Yeah, they told him they only let him take it out certain cases. Well, somehow he had access to it. And, you know, I think I might have taken it away from him.
Yeah, you know, if you could, you know, God knows that might have been enough to set him off. You know, I mean, I think there are some, you know, there's so many issues to deal with here. But, you know, it concerns me that, you know, attention gets deflected from the basic issue. And, you know, the really basic issue is guns, and the secondary issue is the mental health system. But, you know, first of all the mistakes, I mean, the FBI system, I mean, this is the problem with not having a real agent. It's like in our business, if somebody has an injury and they call, I talk to them. You know, one of my assistants may get their name, but I talk to them because I'm the one who has to evaluate. For the FBI to have a system where you've got somebody who's like a 911 call screener taking these calls, we've seen how that works in Madison or doesn't work on occasion. And I've called 911 a few times myself, and it really is kind of appalling when you're calling about something that's emergent, and they're saying, and when were you born? And oh, where'd you grow up? Did you go to high school? You know, I mean, it's like, good God, folks. You know, something's happening that needs to be addressed. I know you have to get basic things like name and location, but beyond that, but for, you know, the screener to just blow this off is outrageous. I mean, that person should certainly be fired, and they need to review their system. The fact is, though, you know, it's like you talk about the mental health, only this, only that. We talk about people, you know, calling and taking notice of things and warning. There was a lot of that here. I mean, the police had been involved numerous times. The school was well aware of it, that he had significant problems. There was a lot of people. And as you said, clearly this is a kid who wasn't hiding this. I mean, it isn't like, I don't think he did say at one point he's going to shoot people. But I mean, it isn't something where he had this secret plan that he had been concocting for months and months and wasn't telling anybody. I mean, he had talked to a lot of people. And the fact is, one, our mental health system makes it extremely difficult. One of the few things that the president said recently about this that is true is that, yeah, our mental health system makes it extremely difficult to get help, particularly for a younger person, for anybody. I mean, involuntary commitment is nearly impossible. You have to show that the person is an imminent threat of serious physical harm to himself or others. I once saw a judge during, of course, one of these hearings say that the person wasn't a serious threat to themselves because they had slit their wrist crossways instead of slitting up and down the arm, which everybody knows is the way you do it if you really want to kill yourself. And I thought, well, I think he probably appreciates the advice, Judge. I didn't know that. Haven't thought about it, of course. But, you know,
that wasn't the late Russell Mittelstadt, was it? That sounds like something he would have said.
It was actually, I believe it was Judge Jones, who was a really good person in all kinds of ways and a wonderful person. What led him to that folly, I don't know. But, I mean, I've represented people at those hearings back when I was a younger lawyer and got appointed. And I'll tell you, trying to keep somebody involuntary commitment is just get them there to begin with and then keep them there. I had a client who was picked up in the middle, sleeping in the middle of the road, a block off the square on West Washington Avenue. Turned out he was a guy who had gone to Harvard with a bunch of people, bright guy, had, I think, drugs, but probably drugs combined with mental health issues, had just really gone off the deep end. But he'd go around the country visiting all these people he'd met when he was at Harvard, and if he was on his meds, he'd do fine, and he wouldn't have a problem. But as soon as he got off his meds, he'd decompensate, and this would happen. And I was appointed, went out to meet with him at Mendota, walked in. He was under the bed, and for the first 10 minutes, all he would say was kakalaka. That was the entire conversation from his part, and I'd ask him questions, and he'd respond kakalaka. Finally got him to come out from under the bed, sit on the bed, talk, and got to a point where he seemed pretty rational. Went in front of the judge because the hearings were held at Mendota then. And this was the same occasion where I heard him tell the person that, you know, they say that the person wasn't serious because they didn't slit their arms the right way. And my guy, you know, got up and Judge Jones introduced him. I'm Judge Jones. And can I have your name? And the guy gave him his name and then said cock-a-lock, and that's all he'd say for the rest of the hearing. But he got out. Yeah, you know, that was it. He was released. So
even after saying cock-a-lock,
you can't fix that. I mean, that the problem with those theories, I mean, it's fine to say the system isn't great. You know, one, they won't fund a system that actually would be much more beneficial and would let people get the care they want, of course, because we don't want to do that. But two, even assuming adequate funding, you know, if people don't want to get help, and, you know, definitionally, if you're insane or having serious mental difficulties, it's not likely that you're going to rationally appraise your situation and say, you know, I think I really need help. You know? And if they don't want help, it's hard. If you're a parent, it's a nightmare because it's so hard to get help for a kid. Or if you're a loved one with some relative, it's so difficult. I mean, you're watching it. They know how these people are functioning, but boy, you can't get them help if they won't accept it. So yes, that's awful. And I think there are things that could be done, but that's the law. It's constant. That's the Supreme Court decision that pushed us there. You and I both knew Eddie Ben Elson, and you know, Eddie was at the forefront in that stuff. And Eddie was pretty nuts. And, you know, did in the long run, in my view, did no favors to people with significant mental health issues. But the bottom line is you're not going to fix that in a way that will prevent this from happening. So, no, that's not the answer. The answer is, in part, is to get rid of these damn assault weapons and the big magazines. There's no need for them. People can have guns. They can have all kinds of guns. You just don't need those, period.
All right. So when you say that, understand there's an entire culture of people that have been using them for a very long time. They're an extremely popular gun. In the early 90s, they passed an assault weapon ban, but it was riddled with contradictions. In other words, some guns were labeled assault weapons. There were also other semi-automatic rifles that had the same firepower that were not banned. And so after a 10-year period, they looked at the numbers, and statistically speaking, these guns are not used in a high percentage of crimes. Handguns obviously kill a lot more people on a daily basis. That was before the rash of the school shootings.
That's a great point.
I think they're going to have to come up with some sort of compromise. And some countries, such as Canada, allow them, but they have to be kept at the gun range. One of the reasons that they are as popular as they are is because we've been at perpetual war essentially since the Persian Gulf War. And there's a whole generation of young people that have they've used weapons that are similar to these. They're not exactly the same. These aren't technically weapons of war. And there's a whole other culture. So when you say that, just understand there's a whole other culture in this country. The people that haven't abused these guns that own them, and they're kind of shaking their head saying, hey, I didn't abuse this privilege or I didn't abuse this right. Why should I have to give up my gun?
Well, and the answer is you're not going to take guns away from people. We both know that. I mean, we're not going to pass a law that confiscates these guns. It's not going to happen. You can stop people from, you know, making more and selling more. You can stop, you know, the clips, having these and making these and selling these clips that hold 30 bullets and things. You know, one of the things that I think, Sly, and I think your point is absolutely well taken, that you know, these guns have been around. I also think, you know, they're featured in a lot of first-person shooter games. So whole generations of kids have grown up, you know, using them in the games, which, you know, again, is a different thing, and we're not going to change that and probably don't need to. But, and I think that your games, movies, I mean, you just see these weapons all the time, and kids have gotten used to them. The other thing that I think really is a problem is I think these weapons, and you're right, I mean, as a percentage, handguns get used a lot more. We're not going to take handguns away from people, and I'm not suggesting we do. And it's a pretty modest, I'm not also suggesting the gun's the only thing. I think we need far better controls on who purchases guns. I think you need some waiting periods. I think the age thing is fine. I don't think that's the big problem, honestly, but I think it's probably a good idea given who does most of these school shootings. You know, it isn't a lot of 35-year-olds who are walking into the schools. So, you know, there are a number of things you can do, and I guess what I'm just offended by is that, you know, the NRA is just totally inflexible. You know, nothing. I mean, they don't want...
They won't call for banning bump stocks.
Yeah, I mean, and that, you know... That's about as extreme as you can get. Something that's clearly intended to take a legal weapon and make it illegal. I mean, that's precisely what a bump stock's intended to do, is circumvent the automatic weapons ban. And even that is a bridge too far for them. So I read a story, and I'm sure you're familiar with all this, but I read a story not too long ago that was interesting because they were talking about the fact that the NRA, if you go back 20, 25 years, was much less extreme. And then they got some rival organizations who were more extreme. And, of course, you know, money talks and membership talks.
Yeah, Gun Owners of America. Yep.
Yep, exactly. That's right. I'd forgotten the name. But that just pushed them, you know, to more extreme positions because they were starting to lose membership, which is really a wonderful principled position to take. You know, we got a membership drive on. We got to fight for every single member.
I have to take a break. I have to take a break. I just want to ask you what you think about the president's proposal to let teachers be concealed carry holders in buildings.
Yeah. You know, teachers don't want to be concealed carry holders, one. Two, you know, even more having an armed guard at every school, that's fine. These kids generally, I think almost without exception, have gone to these schools. There probably may be an exception or two. You know, they know who he is. They know where he stands. What are you going to do? He's going to walk in and shoot that guy first. Same thing with the teacher. If you're going to give guns to Mrs. Jones or, you know, Mr. Smith, kid's going to walk into that classroom and shoot the teacher. I mean, you're presumably not going to have them carry it in holsters, you know, at their side. You're going to have it locked away somewhere in the classroom. And, you know, you and I both know some kid will then break in, get the gun and shoot people with that. It's a terrible idea. It's one of many ideas that's a substitute for inaction. It's pretty much equivalent to inaction because they don't want to do anything meaningful. And Paul Ryan is a disgrace. For Paul Ryan to sit in his hands and basically sidetrack all the efforts to do something about guns is just very typical of everything he's done since Trump took office. I mean, the man is an absolute profile in cowardice. It's distressing, to put it mildly.
We'll talk more with Mike Riley next from the Axley Law Firm at SlysOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who is going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
We're back. SlysOffice.com brought to you by great people like the Axley Law Firm. Joining us again, Mike Riley from the Axley Law Firm. Mike, you worked in intelligence for the CIA. I have to tell you, what's going on in America right now with this Russia investigation of the president and his campaign staff it's very bad and very distressing, but this story I find even beyond scary. This is from CBS.
We're taking steps, but we're probably not doing enough.
Admiral Rogers kicked responsibility for the lack of action upstairs.
I want to know why the hell not.
Ma'am,
what's it going to take?
I'm an operational commander, ma'am. You're asking me a question that's so much bigger than me.
Earlier this month, FBI Director Chris Wray told Congress much the same.
We're taking a lot of specific efforts to blunt Russian
efforts. Directed by the president?
Not as specifically directed by the president.
More than a year ago, the Obama administration officially blamed Russia for interfering in the 2016 election. Exposing what the Russians had been up to was part of a U.S. response the Obama administration launched, beginning with public sanctions. But President Trump has sent mixed messages, especially about Vladimir Putin's involvement.
I believe that he feels that he and Russia did not meddle in the election. As to whether I believe it or not, I'm with our agencies.
U.S. intelligence officials say the cyber attacks continue, and they expect Russian hackers to target computer networks ahead of November's midterm elections. Michael Daniel, cybersecurity coordinator for President Obama, says the Russians have one goal, to raise doubt.
To raise doubt. The Russians are going to try to use that tool to further their foreign policy goals and blunt ours and undermine the U.S.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
Well, it is. And, you know, having worked the CIA, and I worked on a Russian desk, and I watched their behavior then, and it hasn't changed much over the years, certainly not with Putin, you know, who is ex-KGB, you know, ex-Soviet intelligence. I mean, this is the kind of thing the Soviets have done for years. I mean, for decades. This is the way they approach things. And Vladimir Putin is a liar. He just lies habitually. Not that that distinguishes him in many ways from our president, but the truth is he knows he's lying. He does it in a very calculated fashion. I mean, you look what's happening in Syria right now, just classic Soviet. Oh, yes, yeah, we're going to go along. Well, not really. We're not going to go along, but we're going to say we're going to go along, and then we're going to blame the other side, you know, when actually nothing changes. And that's the way they are. They manipulate. They're going to attack us. They've always wanted to do that. He feels strongly that, you know, they were robbed of their empire and that Russia's greatness has never been appreciated. And, you know, they'll do whatever they can to undermine us and to further their own interests. And for anyone to suggest that Putin is not involved in this stuff is absolutely silly. You're not running operations of this magnitude in Russia without his knowledge and likely his direction, but certainly not without his knowledge. So, you know,
in your lifetime, did you ever think you'd see a national security team? Trump's own people say the president has offered no initiative on this, that he's literally not doing a thing. There are some things being done in government, but the president is taking no initiative on this.
Yeah, unfortunately, that just illustrates the really fundamental problem with this president. He is totally ego-driven. I mean, nobody who's in politics doesn't have an ego. But, you know, this is a man who is completely ego-driven, and he's just congenitally incapable of going back and admitting that the election was manipulated, because that means that maybe he wouldn't have been elected without it.
That seems to be the most generous explanation. Don't you think he's being blackmailed? Do you think it's possible that he's being blackmailed at this point?
It's not impossible. I'm not a huge conspiracy guy, but I would say that's certainly not impossible. I just don't even know that he operates at that rational a level. I think he just has this gut instinct that to admit that Putin was involved and that this is, you know, somehow suggests that maybe plays into the narrative that, you know, there might have been collusion. And at any rate, just plays into the narrative that they really did interfere and interfered in an effective way. And one thing, Sly, that I'm mortally weary of, and I'm sure you are too, is people saying, well, it didn't affect the outcome. The truth is, we don't know. I mean, am I saying it changed everything? No, I don't know that.
Such a small difference.
People don't know. How can anyone say it didn't make a difference when we're talking, you know, 20,000 votes in a few states? You know, I mean, it could easily have made the difference. May not have. You know, I don't know that. And we'll never be able to prove it one way or another. But in an election that was as close as this one, and given the scope of the interference, the money they spent and the efforts they went to, I'm not convinced that they, you know, somehow rigged our ballot machines, although I think we need to be very careful about that. But they sure as heck, you know, did everything they could to rig the election by weighing in with all sorts of news that really was fake news, which benefited Mr. Trump. And, you know, you just don't know. The fact is, it's a huge thing, and he continually minimizes it. And that's just completely unhealthy. And, you know, at least at the outset, although he's now retrenched slightly, you know, he seemed willing to take Putin's word against our intelligence services. And he continually attacks the FBI and the CIA. I mean, he undermines our own security apparatus while apparently not making any effort to shore up that apparatus to counter the Russian threat.
Let me ask you about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. Obviously, the experiment that I voted for Tim Burns, but the experiment that Tim Burns tried in the primary of running an overtly political campaign appeared to have backfired.
Yeah, I think it did. I voted for Rebecca Dallet. I told a lot of people that, you know, my brother voted, my brother Timmy, who is an ardent, ardent lefty, voted for Burns. And Burns might have been fine. I don't like that. God knows the races have been totally politicized. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce has bought seat after seat. And, you know, the Republicans have packed the court. In effect, they've done it through the ballot box, but they've done it by spending.
You're right, but the Federalist Society's given them all these little shield words to just pretend that they're not bought.
Yeah, absolutely. But they are. I mean, it's just, you look at who's, you know, the shift in the court has been dramatic. Since we lost Pat Crooks, who was a wonderful gentleman and a wonderful justice, it's been downhill. It just has. The reputation of the court has suffered dramatically. I know that, you know, Pat Rogensack takes deep offense at that. I know Pat. Regardless of Pat, I mean, Pat is very different than a lot of the people who've come onto the court after her. Very different, in my view. So,
Pat and I don't get along too well.
I don't accept at all. I mean, her constant attacks on anyone who isn't just going to sing the court's praises are unfortunate, to put it mildly. She's smarter than that. She's a smart woman. She knows what the situation is there. And, you know, given the composition of the court, given the demeanor of the court over the last few years, to suggest that everyone should just, you know, give the court its due obeisance and assume that everything's wonderful. I mean, they're not at this point, the court as a whole, not talking about any individual member. It's difficult to argue that that court deserves a great deal of respect. And that's a shame, because they are a critically important institution, and it needs respect. And I think electing somebody like Rebecca Dallet will at least help. It's not going to solve the problems, but it would push us back in a better direction. And I think, you know, electing someone who is clearly running as a Republican, whatever he says, and is going to continue the move to the right on the court would really be disastrous, because, you know, this, then we got this for another 10 years. We've got to start moving the court back in a better direction.
And of course, Michael Gableman, probably the worst member of the court, by any stretch of the imagination.
It's really hard when you look at qualifications of a number of the members of this court, of the people who've come on the court recently, and I look at the qualifications of justices over the years. I mean, these people as a group fall well short of what we've expected in terms of experience, ability, recognition within the legal community. You just can't argue that many of the members of this court come anywhere near the standards that have been set by people who went before them.
Unfortunately, the electorate doesn't really understand what the Wisconsin Supreme Court does.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, they don't, you know, it's the, you know, you see it in the paper occasionally when there's a big issue before the court, but, you know, people, I don't think, understand how critically important the court is. And it is. I mean, right now in our state, I mean, we have just an outrageous imbalance. We've got, you know, all this gerrymandering. You're never going to, probably the Democrats may never control the assembly again. Right now you've got assembly, Senate, and a governor, all of whom are perfectly happy to see the environment just absolutely ravished. They're perfectly happy to do everything they can for corporate America and nothing at all for individual citizens. And that's the way our state's being run, as a corporate state. You know, you could argue that this really is fascism. But whatever it is, I mean, it's not healthy. And the only check on that is the courts. I mean, the only place that a citizen who's never going to get anything from this, you know, political group who's in control right now and whose rights are not going to be protected by that group, the only redress they have is to go to the courts and ultimately to the Supreme Court, because they are the ultimate arbiters. They're the ones who make the final decision and say, this is the way it's going to be. So they're critical, and it's just like nationally we have checks and balances, and the Supreme Court in the U.S. is, well, it's supposed to be at least a critical part of that. With some of the same problems there, but at least the people there individually, I think, are generally capable with some exceptions. It's hard to argue that here, but the biggest problem is you just have the deck stack. So now when you go to the justice system, if in fact you have an issue that ends up going up on appeal and ultimately gets to the Supreme Court, the notion that you're going to get a fair and impartial hearing and that there isn't, you know, a strong bias in one particular direction just doesn't withstand
inspection. Although somehow earlier this year, Marilyn Townsend was able to go to the Supreme Court and won a case on unemployment, denying someone unemployment 7-0. That was amazing.
It is. And, you know, look, I've seen this court do things that I think are perfectly fine. And I think that's, you know, it's not as if I think you can always forecast 100% reliability what they're going to do. I don't. But I do think there is an awfully strong corporate bias. There's there's just a fairly strong bias to the right. And if we don't have the balance. You should have a balance. I mean, the justices should be impartial, regardless of, you know, whether you think they're the best legal minds in the world. That's never been true, that, you know, you have every justice has been one of the brightest lawyers in the state. That's not so. It never has been so. And as long as you're electing people, it never will be so. But and you, for, the truth is, you can't get, I mean, there are really, really good people in the state. State. Justice Crooks was one of them, and there are others. There are people who are very capable and who just don't want to take the pay cut or don't want the hassle or whatever. So that's just the nature of the beast. But it should be impartial. There should be a balance, and right now that balance really is lacking.
Mike Riley, Axley Law Firm. Your phone number one more time.
608-257-5661.
And thanks for coming to SlicedOffice.com.
SlicedOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.